This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Welcome back to the WOMED. There's been a lot going on this week, to say the least. We just had the election and the AMA talking about scope creep. So in light of that, it felt like the perfect time to highlight a badass PA. This week, Sochi Rent-Elm is joining me to speak about her journey in medicine, becoming a PAC, and even some medical aesthetic talk because lots of y'all are interested in that field. So let's get ready, peeps. All right, time for everyone's favorite part of the WOMED, nursty energy. So most of y'all are aware the AMA recently made a little statement about scope of practice and scope creep. And I just wanted to shout out all of you taking a stance and empowering the voices of nurse practitioners and PAs and CRNAs, because advanced practice caregivers are pivotal to the healthcare team and all the populations that they serve. So keep sending in your NDE moments, how you're empowering others, and moments that made you feel like you were like fully immersed in your power as a healthcare professional. Welcome back to the WOMED, everyone. I'm so excited today. I have Sochi Rent-Elm joining me on the podcast today. Honestly, I was looking back through episodes and different guests I've had on, and I'm like simultaneously kind of mad at myself, but also really excited to finally have a PA on the WOMED. Like, I don't know why it's taken me this long.
I'm super happy to be the first one.
I know. I'm really happy too. But I'm like, we need more PAs represented on here too. So
yeah,
you are the first, and I'm very sorry that it has taken me this long to get a PA on. So we've kind of talked a little bit. I am like still almost like a year in the medical aesthetic world, and I'm so excited to talk to you about that later. But I want to know a little bit more, just since you are our first PA. How did you decide that this is the right path in medicine for you?
Yeah, so I had a bit of a convoluted journey, but I'm really happy for all of the struggles, because you know, I feel really confident that I chose the right profession, and I'm very happy, and I'm also very passionate about this profession. It's young, it's new. I actually considered doing the NP route as well. And I really think at the end of the day, NPs and PAs are pretty much, you know, one and the same. We're like the same kind of people. So, but there are a few reasons why I ended up doing PA versus NP. But my original journey, I was always pre-med. I was a bio major in my undergrad career at UC Irvine. And so I was on that pre-med track, which was super competitive, and it wasn't the best environment overall for me. I struggled a little bit in school, but I knew that I wanted to go into medicine. And so I just kind of kept pushing along, even though I didn't feel really great about the whole process. And I just wasn't, I think I kind of had blinders on, and I just really wasn't familiar with the other, you know, parts of the team. Mm-hmm. I really just kind of had my heart set on being a physician since I was a little kid. And I just kind of just, I'm very goal oriented. So I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm sticking with. And yeah, I really didn't allow any flexibility to explore any other kind of similar careers. So I did the whole, you know, I graduated, I took the MCAT. I even applied And during the process, as I mentioned, I just didn't feel confident. I didn't feel very secure. I just didn't really enjoy the process, which was kind of, I thought was normal. But during some of my shadowing experiences and my volunteer work and just my, you know, all of the things that you have to do to get all of your, experience, I actually ended up meeting some NPs and PAs along the way for the first time. I had never had any personal experiences with a PA or NP. And I said, wait a second, what is this thing? What is this career? You kind of do similar things. You at the end of the day, you're diagnosing people, you're treating them, mm-hmm. It's very similar, but in some ways I almost think that there's some advantages and some things that I like better about being a PA or NP, which is the shorter schooling, that I was more likely to be able to go to school closer to home because home is very important to me and my community was very important to me. The fact that I really wasn't sure about what specialty I'd like to do, and I really mm-hmm. had interests in different specialties. For example, now I'm in primary care and aesthetics, which are like two worlds apart, And so I always consider myself a very like multifaceted person. I like different types of people, different types of things. So the lateral mobility was also something that piqued my interest. And so at the end of the day, I ended up taking, which was hard for me because, as I mentioned, I'm very, typing, kind of goal-oriented, and I seemed like I was like, in a way, giving up on my original dreams and goals. But I really think I just pivoted into something that was better suited for me. And the only reason I kind of chose PA over NP was because, as a bio major, I had all the prerequisites, and it would have been a little bit, I think for some people, someone who's a more pre-med, it kind of makes a little more sense to go to PA school. It's a little more direct. Mm-hmm. And so, there was like a BSN, for example, at UC Irvine. And so I had some friends who were that major, and so it made sense for them to go to NP school after. So that's kind of just, the reason why I chose that route, and I haven't looked back. I went to USD, which is in Los Angeles, which is where I grew up and where I want to practice medicine. So it just kind of all ended up falling into place, and I'm super happy about it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I've been so curious, now that you say, since you were a bio major, you went a little bit more like the PA route. Most nurse practitioners will work a couple years at the bedside and then go for their NP, or, there's a handful that just continue.
Go straight through.
Yeah. Is a PA like a master's or?
Yeah. So it's a master's. So it's at USC, for example, it's through the Keck School of Medicine, and it's a master's in physician assistant practice. So MPAP.
Oh, okay.
And you're right that a lot of nurse practitioners obviously work as nurses first, mm-hmm. but in PA school, I think it's kind of similar. And I think that's the unique thing about PAs and NPs versus like med school in general, because they tend to have kind of these a little bit more life experience. And because mm-hmm. it's also required, the patient hours are kind of required for PA school more so than in med school. So most of my classmates were, LVNs, phlebotomists, EMTs, CNAs, there was a whole research assistants, all kinds of scribes. There was all kinds of different experiences. And most people had a few years doing that. Mm-hmm. There were definitely people that were, 23 that went straight from undergrad to PA school. And then we had someone who was in their 60s in our class, which is also rare, but we had like a whole range of ages and life experiences. And I honestly think that makes us better providers at the end of the day. And also just makes for a really beautiful, class experience. I mean, school is hard, but mm-hmm. why not enjoy the journey and be able to kind of enjoy these experiences with all types of different people and learn from all types of different people. So.
I love that. I guess I always had in my brain that, nurses could only do like the NP route.
And they can do the PA. I don't think there were any RNs in my class. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, I know there were like LVNs and CNAs and, but I don't think there were, but I know that it happens all the time, so I know it exists.
Yeah. No, I think that's amazing. I didn't realize it. Like, I think everyone, it's just drilled in nursing school that, like, if you're going to go on and further, like, have an advanced degree, it's a nurse practitioner. But, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think that I know it's kind of weird. It's, you know, as I mentioned, like, I went through my whole undergrad without even thinking about these careers. Like, I don't think I really, I think I knew what it was. Maybe I'd seen it written down, but I didn't really know. I never saw anyone. I never shadowed anyone until after I graduated. I never considered doing anything else. And now it seems like such a perfect fit for me.
Yeah.
And, like, thank goodness I figured it out. You know?
Did you take any time off in between?
Yeah. So I had three gap years, technically. So one was kind of that med school process. And then the other was kind of, you know, switching my route. And honestly, it's all a blur. So, like, when people ask me, I do a lot of mentoring, but when I always caution my mentors that I just, like, I feel like I blacked out during this period. I don't have a lot of the details are super fuzzy about exactly how many hours, you know, they ask, how many hours did you do? And how many, you know, I don't remember any of that. I tried to look it up and I couldn't find any, you know, anywhere where I had, you know, saved it. The application, unfortunately, is now expired because it's been so long. But I took three gap years, and I really think, you know, I get a lot of students I mentor that are kind of feel like they're in a rush or they feel like they're behind. And I really don't feel like people should look at it that way, because just as nurse practitioner students often, you know, work at the bedside, like, that's such valuable experience. You learn so much about yourself. You know, I don't think if I had gone straight into school, I don't think I had quite the study skills, the social skills, you know, the resilience, you know, the life experience. I was missing so much. And I'm grateful for those years. I also did fun stuff. Like, I did, I traveled with my family to Europe. And I worked for Lululemon, which was, you know, kind of random, but was, like, such a good experience for me, and kind of where my, like, love for workout classes kind of, you know, was born. And so, yeah, I just, you know, I think all of those, there's no rush. And so I think those gap years were super valuable, and I would do it all over again if I had to.
I think that's really great advice, because I think about these graduating seniors and, like, high school seniors, and in America, like, we have to go to college right away. Like, that's what's expected of us. When you look at different countries and they're like, no, like, take some time, figure out what you want to do, then go to university. Or, well, I don't know. Is it university or is it college in, like, Europe?
I don't know. It's confusing.
But to, like, have that time to explore and figure out, or just, like, get a little more idea of who you are and, like, what you like to do, and to figure out how to make a career out of doing that.
Yeah. And a lot of it is, like, when you're in high school, you're kind of, everything is kind of organized for you. Like, I was really overworked. I was doing so many extracurricular activities and stuff, but I never kind of made decisions so much for myself. And that's, like, a huge part of growing up, you know?
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
So what was PA school like? Are there different clinical rotations or fellowships, residencies?
A little bit of both. Yeah. I know it's kind of confusing, but basically the first year is kind of, like, I like to say, sort of initially a review of your undergraduate education, but like very, very fast.
Okay.
So like the biochemistry and all that good stuff, kind of just a review of your bio degree. And then after that, you go into your didactic year where you learn how it's just like a flurry of like clinical instructions, so learning how to do all of your exams, and then also topics in medicine, so actual diseases and disorders and how to treat them. And then you do your clinical rotations. The clinical rotations, at least at USD, were 6 weeks. And then after that, after you finish all of them, you get to select your specialty that you'd like to do in an advanced rotation, meaning you're going to do one of them over, not over, but you know, you're going to do it again. Yeah. And then you're done. And then you have to pass the boards. Yes. It's called the PANTS. And I think a lot of PAs do it pretty immediately after. Some do take some time to study, but it's kind of like, you know, it's supposed to be that your PA school education prepares you for the board. So you don't really need to take so much time extra after to study. And yeah, so that's kind of how it goes. I did a little bit of a longer program. USC is one of the longer ones, which I liked. It was 33 months. It allowed a couple of vacation periods, which was fun. People traveled, people worked, people got married, people, I don't know, did you know, their things. But we also, you know, it was still definitely a very fast pace. And then the rotations were 6 weeks, which a lot of programs have 4 week rotations, which I think was really nice too, because it allowed us a little extra time to get, you know, acclimated and get as much as we can out of it.
So what did you do your advanced rotations in?
I did it in primary care. So PAs can be in any specialty, you know, at the end of the day. I always wanted to go into primary care, which unfortunately I don't think is the most popular, you know, specialty. But it's kind of what sparked why I wanted to go into medicine, why I wanted to be a physician. Essentially, my parents are both elementary school teachers in an underserved area of Los Angeles, where a lot of people are uninsured, underinsured, you know, it's low income. And I just remember from a really early age, having this kind of realization that health disparities really affect all parts of people's lives, including their education. So, you know, my parents would come home from work and they'd say, so-and-so's mother is sick. And so they've been missing school, or someone has a toothache and have to have their tooth pulled, so they're missing school. And just like all these things that didn't make sense to me, because, you know, I go to the dentist every 6 months. I remember having to have my teeth pulled. Or my parents, you know, they go to the doctor when they're sick. They don't get they're not gravely ill. Like, things that I just couldn't relate to. And so I think even really early on, I just realized that primary care is so important, and there's people that are not even getting that. And so that was kind of what sparked my interest, in addition to obviously my natural love for science and, like, you know, the human body and all of that stuff. So I always knew I wanted to do primary care. All of my experiences in undergrad where I did like pediatric clinical research. I did a lot of health fairs, like public health campaigns. I did like grant writing for the American Academy of Pediatrics as well. I just did a lot of things in a primary care type way. And so I just knew I wanted to go into that. And also as a PA, you know, your schooling is very short. Yeah. I kind of wanted to make sure I got my bread and butter medicine down. We don't have a residency. We don't have a fellowship like you would in medicine. Normally, you just kind of get thrown out there as soon as you're done. So I just thought that my original intention was to go into primary care. And I also want to make sure I got that experience, because some of my friends going into specialties right away, once you kind of get in that, you get kind of stuck there and it's hard to go back, you know, and go, you know, back into primary care. So I always knew I wanted to do that. So my first job out of PA school, which I got, I was, you know, signed on for, you know, contingent on passing my boards, even before I graduated, was for a federally qualified health center in Los Angeles, FQHC. And so basically underserved, underinsured. And I did that for over 4 years and I loved it. I had primarily Spanish speaking patients. I felt like it was super rewarding. It was also definitely exhausting. you know, there's a lot of non-compliant patients. There's a lot of like red tape and just things that would impede me from helping my patients as much as I wanted to, you know, insurance and things like that. difficulty getting specialists. But I loved every minute of it. And I'm so glad for that experience, that I had that experience.
Do you still work in primary care then right now too, or?
It's a great question. So it's so funny. So basically my journey into where I am now from after being a PA from primary care was, I really saw myself, I loved primary care and I really thought, I could do this for my whole career, like no problem. Mm-hmm. I just need to find a way to kind of deal with the burnout that I think is happening from being very like 8 to 5 or sometimes 6 or 7, a Monday through Friday, like having trouble, like taking days off to just get my own appointments in, like just kind of that experience. I was like, I need to find a way to deal with that, but I really could do this for a long time because I enjoy it. I really do. But I was kind of talking to my husband and talking to some of my peers. And also, Instagram, I think, is a great tool. And I saw a lot of my colleagues and my peers doing aesthetic medicine. And I said, that looks so fun. Like, and it looks like another side of me that I would be really interested in, but I don't know if I'll ever get to explore that because I'm in primary care and just like they're two worlds apart essentially.
Yeah.
And I remember someone spoke on a panel. We had a lot of like alumni panels at the end of our, PA school, which I thought were super helpful. And I remember someone talking about their friend saying that their friend is underserved primary care like 3 days a week and does like aesthetic medicine 2 days a week or something like that. And I remember thinking in my head, like, that's so cool. Like, that sounds like something I'd want to do.
Yeah.
And then I never really thought about it, for 4 years. So I realized that I needed to take the chance and I need to explore it because if I didn't, I would just end up in primary care forever. And I would probably be very happy, but if I don't try it out, well, I'll never know how much I like it or if I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so funny. I really believe, in manifestation, not so much in like the hokey stuff that like I say something, I utter these words.
Like you're going to speak into the universe.
Yeah. But to an extent, I really do believe in it because I start talking about it, with my husband, with my friends, as I mentioned, start following mm-hmm. people on Instagram, kind of start like looking into it. And yeah. I decide to tell my workplace that I want to take Fridays off. Cause I said, there's no way I can explore any other specialties if I can't, like, I literally don't have time to do it. A.
Right.
And B, mm-hmm. I need to, if I'm going to do this for longer, I need to fight the burnout. So I remember I literally had like 2 Fridays off, like after they agreed and they said, sure, you're doing great. We would love to keep you on. We want to help you out too. So I remember having like 2 Fridays off. I remember I went to like yoga on one of the Fridays. I got like a massage the other Friday. I hadn't even started looking. And I got essentially a message from someone who I had seen as she was like my dermatologist, asking mm-hmm. if I was looking for a job, and she knows I'm in primary care, but she was looking for a PA to train. And I was like, what? That is so weird. Like,
that's this amazing.
I know, it was like the weirdest thing ever. And so the next Friday, the 3rd Friday I had off, I interviewed, she gave me an offer and I was super, excited. And I decided to do a little research. I essentially like asked a bunch of people to copy or, to phone calls that were mm-hmm. in the field to kind of like pick their brains. Cause I kind of had to make this big decision, should I leave primary care? And in the end, I actually declined the offer. I just didn't think it was the right fit. And mm-hmm. they really wanted me to do a quick 2 week, like give my work a 2 week notice and just make this transition. And I just didn't feel in my gut that it was right. And I was, it was like the most emotional experience because I said, did I just miss out on my chance? But I decided to kind of turn my mindset around and say, mm-hmm. you know what, this just shows that someone is willing to invest in me and train me and mm-hmm. I can find a better fit. And something that kind of just makes me feel a little better about the process. So it gave me that confidence. And someone that I talked to during this process that I kind of picked her brain was actually going on maternity leave. And she said, you know what? I know that they're going to hire because I'm going on maternity leave. I think you should apply. And I said, well, I don't have any experience, right? And she said, well, I think it'll be fine. I think if they're willing to invest in you, they're willing to invest in you. Mm-hmm. As a PA or as a nurse or an NP, you just have this ability to be flexible and to learn quickly. And so, they'll be willing to invest in that. So I applied, I was hired, and I was, over the moon because they let me gradually go from my other job to this job. So like a few days a week and then eventually full time. Mm-hmm. And then eventually left primary care. And honestly, the first year I was so busy with training and, you know how that goes, that I didn't have time to even think about anything else. But I felt was starting to feel good, but I was starting to miss a little bit of that primary care. And I think when everything was full circle was the first week of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We found out our dermatology clinic was going to close. All of my friends pretty much are in the ER or in the hospital, you know, all my PA colleagues. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling kind of guilty. I was feeling like I was just sitting down, twiddling my thumbs while all of my friends were like on the front lines. And
yeah.
I just had this like strong urge to like kind of throw myself back in there, not maybe in the same way that I was. So I immediately sat down on my computer and just applied to like all of these telemedicine jobs, because that was like something that's really like I saw like popping essentially.
Yeah.
And within, and because everything was expedited with like credentialing and stuff because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. I was basically like I was hired and onboarded and like started working and helping with like, you know, coronavirus concerns and like getting people testing and dealing with people that were afraid to like that had other concerns like a UTI or whatever and were afraid to go to the doctor because of everything that was going on.
Right.
So I got that job and I did that while our dermatology clinic was closed. And now I do it per diem while still doing aesthetic medicine. So I'm full circle. I'm doing urgent care telemedicine while I'm also doing aesthetic medicine. So that's my story. That was a really long-winded story, but I thought I had to tell the whole thing to fully understand. Yeah.
No, I love that. But that's also so helpful too, because there's so many people. I mean, I know I get a lot of nurses asking me how they made like that transition into the aesthetic world. And I know that there's so many people that, you know, I miss the NICU world, but I also can't go back to that as like no one's hiring into NICUs in PRN positions.
Right.
You know, like, like there's a whole, I would have to, you know, work full-time nights and then gradually like get on different lists to, you know, hopefully get to that PRN spot. So I feel like I've kind of sacrificed that, and just to be working in the aesthetic world. But I think that's amazing that you've been able to find that balance, and that's going to relate to a lot of people who, you know, also just needing to exercise like your brain in different fields of medicine. So like you said, like you can help combat that burnout.
Right. No, totally. And I think it's a beautiful thing to work with different kinds of people, you know, mm-hmm. and they're rewarding in different ways. And I think I was a little nervous to jump into aesthetic medicine after doing kind of this, like, you know, primary care that's very rewarding, mm-hmm. in like two different, completely different patient populations,
yeah.
but it's rewarding in different ways. And,
yeah.
I don't feel bad about it. And I think some people are maybe nervous about taking the plunge, and you're right that sometimes it requires a big sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
but you know, if you never try, you're never going to know if it was worth it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what is your aesthetic office like? Like what types of procedures are you doing?
Yeah. So I found definitely the perfect fit. I work at Facile Dermatology and Boutique. And it is just such a dream place. It's so cute. very aesthetic, you know, aesthetically pleasing to the eye. So it's just a wonderful work environment to be in, mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis, which is amazing. But we really focus on conservative and natural aesthetic results, which is something, mm-hmm. that I am very, you know, much a fan of.
Right.
So subtle results. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of patients who aren't even doing injectables. Obviously we have like filler and Botox and Dysport and, you know, neurotoxins, and mm-hmm. we're also do treatments like lasers and microneedling, but a lot of our patients aren't even doing injectables, and they're just there for acne consultations, hyperpigmentation, like melasma consultations, and treatment, obviously. And just kind of want to get their best skin, you know? They want to, like, I get a lot of people that say, I don't want to wear makeup, or I want to wear less makeup. You know, I just want to feel confident in my skin. And I think that's like some of the best stuff that we do, and some of the most rewarding.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really nice because it's, you know, we try to differentiate ourselves a little bit from like a med spa, because we do we do some medical treatment, but we're not medical dermatology, you know, we're not doing like biopsies or things like that. But we're definitely doing, we're definitely treating, you know, diagnosing and treating, but we're also doing these aesthetic treatments. So it's kind of a nice combo. And our goal is to really make people feel comfortable and not feel like they're in a cold medical office, you know,
right.
And really develop great relationships. I have such great relationships with my patients. Like, we talk about everything in there, you know, it's kind of like a therapy session for the both of us, you know?
It is. It's so fun.
Yeah. I think people really open up in those environments, like vulnerability, you know, feeds vulnerability and creates for these really open like conversations and topics. I think people don't really realize how people's skin or whatever, you know, aesthetic, you know, these things people see as like imperfections or things that they're worried about, they really can affect someone's confidence, their mental health, their, you know, their physical, and the physical health is often, you know, other medical problems that people have sometimes affect, you know, their aesthetic outcomes. So I think that's something that is nice that I have that primary care background, because I am very like understanding of other medical problems that patients might have that might affect the things that we're talking about. So yeah, it's really great. It's a great place to be. And I'm really happy. I'm really happy there.
Wow. What an asset you are. That was going to be one of my other questions. I was like, oh, well, do you guys do like cyst removal and like cancer screenings and, you know, stuff like that too?
We do, we don't do that, but we do some, there's always sometimes this like blurred line, for example, like milia or, you know, seborrheic keratoses or these things that kind of like blur the line between like cosmetic, like they'll go to their dermatologist and the dermatologist, like they're not covered by like their insurance, you know? So then they'll come to us to get it like done, or like, you know, or maybe the dermatologist will be able to do a cortisone shot, but someone, they can't get in for 6 months. Well, that's not going to help them very much.
Right.
Like if their wedding is next week and they like need a, you know, it's like, it's, you know, so we kind of fit that, like we kind of help blur that line a little bit. And I think we've got a good sweet spot there.
That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like I've gotten, I mean, I just made this switch.
Yeah. I want to hear about your journey too. Tell me.
Oh my gosh. In like end of January. And
oh my gosh, so crazy time to do it.
Very crazy time. And I had done, you know, prior to that, when I was trying to see if it was something I was even interested in, you know, palette resources or something would have like workshops and you can go and you can bring a model if you want to, but they just kind of break down a whole, you know, lecture, so to speak. And I had gone to some of those and had done like a few more, but like our office also had to close halfway through March, end of March.
Yeah.
And we didn't, weren't able to reopen until May. So it was like, I had just gone through and like gotten trained, was confident and like in Botox and seeing patients that way. And then we were about to start in on filler and like everything shut down. And even now, like some trainers are just kind of starting, at least in Tennessee, to come and do in-person sessions and stuff.
We just had our first one last week and we had stopped, like we didn't have any, where I was doing them all the time before. So that sounds about right. I think they're starting to start up again.
So I feel like my whole kind of journey in this is really very stulted.
It's a bit of a bummer, but
it is.
You know, it will all work out.
It will. And it's still fun. Like it's such a unique nursing career in that you can bring more, like a feel of, I think a lot of nurses and medical professionals in general have a bit of like a creative side that, you know, kind of gets pushed to the back burner.
Yeah.
You know,
because
everything's so, everything's so scientific, you know, but we have like a different artistic outlet that I feel like, especially this field, lets us explore more. And I struggle a little, and maybe you do too, but with kind of like the vanity portion of this field, because you're like, yes, I'm correcting, you know, something that makes this person feel super uncomfortable or very self-conscious. But like, at what line are you like just going along with, you know, the ideals of beauty, you know, and and perpetuating, you know, this idea that, no, your face actually has to look like this to be attractive or something. It's like, that's something I've struggled with. But I think it's kind of like anything, like if this is going to be something that makes you personally feel better and more confident and live like your fuller, happiest life, as long as you're doing this for you and like not for someone else, I think that like that feels good for me.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to look at it. First of all, you should do what's best for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, of course. But I agree with you. There's definitely this like really, like there's this fine line. And I thought I was going to deal with it more than I actually feel like I do deal with it, where I was worried about having a lot of patients with like body dysmorphia and like, yeah, you know, unrealistic goals. But it's mm-hmm. actually, at least for me, and now that I've been doing it for a little while, that's not, doesn't seem to be the case most of the time. Most people want to look like themselves and they actually don't right. want to look unnatural. They mm-hmm. just want to look like the most refreshed version of themselves.
Exactly.
Or they want to like age. They want to age. They don't want to look, you know, if they're 40, they don't want to look 20, but they want to age gracefully. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's like the majority of what people say. And of course there's, you know, that's even there's a fine line, but I'm pleasantly surprised, and that makes me really happy that I don't usually, and I tell people no a lot. A lot of people yeah. say, do you think I need this? Cause they really value your opinion. And I say no. I feel like I sometimes say no more than I say yes.
yeah.
You know, I'm like, you're not ready yet. Like, no, in a few years, we'll discuss that again. We'll readdress. We'll, you know, you know, and if someone wants something that's really unattainable or unrealistic, I make sure to tell them. And I think that's important, mm-hmm. but some of these like really like little things is like, for example, a gummy smile, for example, is a really quick fix you can do with Botox or Dysport.
Right.
Where someone who has, you know, when they smile, they show a ton of gum, you know this. It's one of those things that's just so little, and like, you know, maybe the what's seen as beautiful like should be like lots of gums. Like, why not? Like, but
right.
but I've had people that literally cry after because they tell me that they're relearning how to smile because they're always covering their mouth with their hand or yeah. like not smiling in photos. And like, okay, well maybe it's because the society says that a gummy smile is less attractive. I don't know, but we could get into that. You're right. And like, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, if that's something that such a tiny little thing that doesn't really affect how they look, but it's like right. so subtle and it makes them super confident. Mm-hmm. Like, I had like a patient the other day tell me she was like dating again for the first time in 2 years. And she didn't say it was because of what I was doing, but I, right. just, every time I've seen her, she looks more and more confident. She looks, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's, we're only doing these tiny little subtle things. We're not doing anything crazy. She looks like right. herself, but she just looks like this. I think it's more, sometimes I think it's there's a little bit of a placebo effect even, you know,
yeah.
It's like the self-care and like the dressing, you know, things, they just have a little more pep in their step and a little more confidence. So mm-hmm. yeah, I totally get what you're saying though. But I will say, you know, I don't have much more experience than you, but I think now that I've been doing it for a little bit of time,
yeah.
I really feel like overall it's best for me and making me live a happy life. But at the same time, I think most of my patients have a pretty like healthy grasp on what we're working on, and
yeah.
And they're so much happier and after that, I think it's a win-win.
I do too. And I think the aesthetics world can get a bad rap sometimes because there are those like overt adjustments and stuff made, mm-hmm. like someone is too filled or you know, just has, I mean, like unrealistic expectations and, you know, injectors that decide to do those types of mm-hmm. injections. But it's not so much vanity as, you know, trying to help someone be more self-confident so that they can live their life happily.
Totally.
Yeah.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
So are you a trainer then? Like, do you go around and train on different fillers?
I'm not. Okay. That's definitely like, it's so funny because that was never like anything I thought about, like, you know, doing anytime soon. I don't think I'm experienced enough, but I never even considered it as a future goal until recently. I've had some experiences with trainers that just look like they're having the best time.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Whenever I go to a training, something that I feel really confident on, I'm like, oh, well, I feel like I didn't learn. No, I don't know anything, because they just teach it from such a fresh perspective, and they put their spin on it, and they have their little pearls and their little tips and tricks. And you're like, wow, I can't believe I learned so much about something I thought I knew. So yeah, definitely a long-term goal. I'm not a trainer, but definitely a long-term goal. Like, I want to get really, really good.
Same.
I want to grow with my patients. We have a lot of young patients.
Yeah.
And I want to grow with them. I want to, you know, have them for life. That would be like the ideal. I'm so glad I found aesthetic medicine. I definitely want to do this for the long term. This isn't something I just like tried and like, you know, this is my long term thing. I think that the perfect balance for me is to do this like per diem kind of primary care thing, just to kind of soothe that side of me and kind of keep that up, because I want to keep up that medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what's going to happen in the world if we have to shut down again for 2 years, you know? So I want to make sure I have, you know, that too. And also, you know, I just, you know, I do other things too. Like, as I mentioned, I do a lot of mentoring, and I'm actually do some teaching. I taught clinical skills, at a PA program for the first time this year, and I'll be doing a lecture, next in a couple months, for USC.
Very cool.
Which again makes me refresh on all my, you know, all my bread and butter medicine. So, I want to stay well-rounded and, you know, stay up to date, you know, for as long as I can. And, I'm very happy like with the balance I have right now.
That's amazing. That makes me so happy to hear that.
Thanks. And that's, you know, that's something that's unique about, you know, I think PAs and NPs, we can kind of do a couple things at once.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that.
Yeah. I would say that with nursing and stuff too, because I mean, you're living proof. You can work telehealth. You can do aesthetic injections. You can work anywhere.
And I've seen a lot of these like travel nursing, which I don't think is as popular in the PA career, but I like that sounds so cool. Like what an incredible opportunity, and like it seems like they're like, at least the ones that I've engaged with seem to love it. So there's all kinds of stuff. I think it's important that people think outside the box.
And PAs aren't subject to being, you know, stuck in a certain field of medicine. You know, like, you didn't have to go and do your fellowship and be an attending just in surgical medicine, or, you know, in the NICU, or in a specific age bracket. Like, you can pursue different avenues. And I love that there's that flexibility with the PA route too.
Yeah, no, totally.
What would you say is the most annoying thing you get asked about being a PA? And what would you like to clear up? Are there like any misconceptions about the field?
I will say, you know, I was really worried when I first made my swap from going to med school and being a PA, was I was worried it's going to actually happen a lot more, and it really doesn't. I would say there's a few little things. It was really interesting. I don't know if you saw that thing going on around on Instagram that said like assumption, you know, like you make assumptions and then like you can like debunk them. I thought it was like a really cool thing. So I did it.
Oh, neat.
And I was really surprised to see someone in the assumptions box put that I hate NPs. And I was just like, whoa, like what? Yeah. Like, what is this? I don't know what this weird thing about PA versus NP, like There's just like, it's funny because I haven't personally experienced it. Like in both of my, in all of my workplaces, they're both. So like, for example, in my dermatology practice, there are two NPs and I'm the only PA, but there was another PA before. And then, before that, there were a few PAs at my primary care, there are a few PAs and like one NP. And then, you know, in my telemedicine job, there's like, I think it's probably 50-50. There's tons of them. So it's just like, I just think that's so strange. I've heard that there's like, in some places there's like weird, I don't know.
Like an animosity or something.
Yeah. But I have never encountered that. And I would have like, I always tell people that I consider the NP route, it just like made a little more sense for me to do the PA route. But at the end of the day, they in all my workplaces, we're doing the same thing. Literally the same thing. And so I thought that was really interesting. I do think that most people do know what an NP is versus a PA. So some people are still don't know what we are. They'll think I'm like a medical assistant because the name is a little bit of a misnomer. So we're not medical assistants. We do, you know, as NPs do, we you know, diagnose, treat.
You can prescribe.
Prescribe. Yeah. And prescribe medication. So that's one thing that I think apparently some people think that there is some animosity. I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that the medical assistant, that they don't realize that we are like autonomous. I think the autonomy is actually something that's interesting. So in all of my jobs, of course I have a supervising physician. I have to, but actually it's interesting. And this is not the case for all of my colleagues, but all of my jobs, I've actually really not even had a supervising physician in the same like building as me most of the time. So I think maybe that's an interesting thing that maybe someone that's like new, that doesn't know about the profession, doesn't realize that like, they don't have to be like right next to me. Even I've had, like, I've mentored three PAs and like, they're surprised to hear that. So I want people to know that. And I think, as long as I'm like a phone call away, essentially, and they do review my charts, but, they don't really like, it's not like we go over them together and like correct me on them, you know?
They're not staring over your shoulder being like,
no,
I don't think that's the right spot for that.
I don't have to run by anything. There's a complete level of trust once you're trained on something. And, and then of course it's great. Like my supervising physician right now is like incredible. I text her about like, I know that no question is, you know, stupid or, you know, I ask her everything and she'll text me like 5 minutes or she'll call me if we need to discuss something, further. But yeah, super supportive, fully trusts me, but at the same time, she's there for me if I ever need to ask her for something. And part of it is simply just she has like 20 plus years of experience, you know? So, you know, there's that component too. But I've had really great relationships with my supervising physicians, but I think that's something that maybe some people don't understand, that we really do have a lot of autonomy.
Yeah. I just feel like that it needs to be renamed.
Oh yeah.
Because the assistant portion, it is because it,
yeah, I like to say it's a misnomer. I think that's like a good way to softly say that it's not the best name, but
that's why I like to refer to it as like an initial as opposed to, you know, like a PA.
Me too. I hate writing it out because of that reason. Cause I really just feel like the assistant word doesn't. So the original name and in the name that is used in some other countries, like for example, in England, is physician associate, which I think is a better name.
That's much better.
So I think that's a bit better name.
They have like clinical officers too, is another, I think it's pretty.
I've heard of this. And then I think they've been, at least since I've been going to school, there have been efforts to change the name. I think part of the problem is they can't find a good name. I heard all kinds of weird things. And it, like, for example, so nurse practitioner, like physician practitioner wouldn't work. That doesn't make sense. That sounds like a physician, so that doesn't work.
And you're not a nurse.
Nurse practitioner is such a good word. I feel like we can't beat that in terms of how much that describes what's happening. There's not a great name. So unfortunately, it is what it is. So I think PA is definitely the norm and like what I prefer to be called. Every once in a while, they think I'm like a production assistant.
Yeah,
or a personal assistant, but no, I'm the medical kind. So
yeah,
medical PA.
Medical PA. Yes. Like always that. Good to clarify that. Do you think it's a role that they would ever combine with nurse practitioners, you know, and like make it like one thing for
you know, hospitals? It's not a bad idea. And I could see that. You know, what's interesting is I don't know much about it, so don't quote me. I don't know many details, but I know you, I think mm-hmm. it's UC Davis. UC Davis is very unique.
Okay.
And I think they have NPs and PAs. They have both. And okay. I want to say it's under the nursing school. I know that sounds so weird. And like, okay. now I'm like questioning if I'm like just spewing, you know, lies, but I'm Googling it now. So yeah, it's UC Davis School of Nursing. It's Betty Irene Moore School of Nursing. Mm-hmm. And I believe they have both a PA and an NP program, or they're combined. I'm not really sure how it works.
Interesting.
But, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So it's very interprofessional. I mean, and here's the thing mm-hmm. is like, medicine is going that route, right? We're all about like the team, like that should right. be the route.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
Because it seems like something that could be combined, but I didn't know if it was.
Yeah.
Like, they needed to be separate because I mean, your descriptions are very similar, you know,
yeah.
I mean, if not
almost identical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I don't really love the word mid levels, but whatever, advanced practice providers.
Yeah. I like that.
They're yeah, that's better. A lot of people use it though. So it's sometimes I say it by accident, but
yeah,
I mean, we're huge now. We're huge. Mm-hmm. We're growing, and we're also just seen as like a really impactful part of the team, and mm-hmm. definitely shown that through the pandemic and
yeah.
you know, just yeah. So I think yeah, there's going to be definitely more attention in those two fields in the future.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you get a lot of questions and stuff in your DMs about making that switch, but I get so many questions about how I sought out training, how I got hired, you know, into like my clinic and well, med spa, I guess technically, but I feel like I just don't even like to say med spa. I like to say clinic because I feel like it sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Official. I agree.
But people are so curious about how to get into this.
Oh my field. Gosh. I get this question like every day. It's funny yeah. because I have a mentoring. I do a complimentary mentoring for pre-PA students. But lately, I feel like a large percentage are PAs that are already PAs who are looking to get into aesthetics, and they've yeah. DM'd me, and I'm like, just book it on my pre-PA like system, because like I otherwise I don't know when we find the time to talk, and
yeah,
you know, I'll just treat it like that. But yeah, no, mm-hmm. definitely a really great question, and I have a few little pieces of advice.
Mm-hmm.
But to give to people if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Shoot it at me.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, as you know, because you've gone through this journey too, I think the journey mm-hmm. looks different for everybody. There's no like right way or wrong way. There's no
right.
like easy answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I already, you know, shared my journey, but I think a few important pieces of advice are that obviously when you don't have any training to begin with, it's more challenging. But it's not right. impossible, because if not, mm-hmm. then no one would get into it.
Right.
And we mm-hmm. wouldn't be able, we wouldn't be. So I think one of my biggest pieces of advice, and this actually applies to anyone doing anything, is apply anyway. That's like one mm-hmm. of my biggest pieces of advice. And like, it's incredible how much you'll rule out or how many opportunities you'll miss if you don't apply to jobs you don't have the requirements for. I always say, just ignore the requirements. Actually, all of my jobs I've gotten, I ignored the requirements, because my first job in primary care, they hired me even before I graduated, but I think they wanted a year of experience, and I obviously was a new grad, so I didn't have any experience. Mm-hmm. And then this job wanted a few years of experience, didn't have that. I had zero. And then the irony is that my telemedicine job wanted, since it was urgent care, they wanted either 5 years of family medicine or 3 years of urgent care. And I just had I had 4 years of family medicine and I didn't have any urgent care. So again, I have never had the requirement. So if I had just ignored all of those opportunities because of that, I would have, you know, never been where I am now. So that's my number one piece of advice. Obviously you may get a lot of rejection because of that, but like, you don't know until you try.
Exactly.
Yeah. Definitely training, finding, you know, self teaching yourself, because ideally you want to find someone that will train you, but if you show some initiative, I think it helps.
Yes, and so that's a huge point.
Yeah. And you mentioned Palette. I think that's a great resource.
Well, and they make it so easy too, especially right now. They have so many online like 2-hour lectures and with like a live demo, you know, and
yeah,
you can ask questions, you can watch, you can.
Yeah, totally. So definitely the like Palette trainings. Another big thing is shadowing, which I know is tough to find. Mm-hmm. I have a friend that's wanting to get into aesthetics and that's what she's doing. She found a dermatologist that isn't looking to hire anyone, but likes to teach and is letting her kind of, you know, come in once a week and just kind of be, you know, hide in the corner of the room and just, he teaches her things. That's a great way to learn.
Yes.
And another thing too is if you can make friends with reps, pharmaceutical reps in the area, like Galderma and Allergan, because they are so well connected, obviously, because they know all of the different places. So they'll know who's hiring. They'll know who maybe has a training that you're available to like participate in. They will, you know, maybe help you get online trainings. Like, you know, who knows? They want to get people in the field. So they're going to, and they're well connected and they're friendly. Those are
so friendly.
Yeah, they're so friendly. Those are some of my big tips, I think. And I think you also have to, especially, you know, as a nurse or a nurse practitioner or PA, remember that just because you don't have aesthetic medicine skills, you may have lots of skills that are like transferable, essentially, you know, like, did you work in the ER and do procedures? Did you, whatever, you know, did you work in plastics? Did you work in burn? Did you work in, you know, think about the ways you can kind of be flexible. It's not quite aesthetics, but if you did procedures and you, or you had like experience with like skin or anything that could kind of be like, you know, related, use that, like talk about that. And yeah, I don't know. I think those are kind of like my big things I tend to share with people.
Yes.
We're on the same page.
Yes. Being that I'm new, I like to kind of hear from other more experienced in injectors and people in this field to, it just helps verify or validate that I'm
I think also
telling people the right things too.
I think social media is also another one. It's a little taboo in medicine, but it's been like a huge tool for me. In I don't think it's like the reason anyone's hiring me, but I really think like for example, in aesthetic medicine, it's very common to have an Instagram account or some sort of other way to increase accessibility to your patients and show your before and afters, like your portfolio and just kind of, you know, it's like an important tool. So obviously if I had a little bit of that. I didn't really have like as big of a following as I do now. Not that I still have a big following, but I think that was just like, I'm sure that was like a plus because they're like, oh, she can use this to like, you know, help, you know, connect with her patients or future patients.
Yeah.
So that's
like
another one too. And also it's just a great resource in terms of just like networking and like, it's kind of how I got that job opportunity because I had chatted with this stranger essentially on Instagram who I seemed super approachable and I knew she was a derm PA. So I thought like, why not pick her brain? And like, so there's, you know, you might find shadowing that way, or you might find job opportunities. So maybe you don't want to like be out there and have your own public platform, but I think in general, social media, I think is sometimes an overlooked tool. It's really valuable. So.
Agreed.
Yep.
Any last bit of advice for people pursuing the PA route? Not aesthetics, but just PAs in general.
I think a huge thing is to make sure that that's what you want to do. And I think shadowing is probably one of the best ways, shadowing and also just networking with people who are PAs. So you might not actually be able to shadow them, but talking to them, whatever, is the best way to make sure that you want to do that. And then once you've decided, just keep going. It's so competitive. Unfortunately for PAs, just because there's not as many programs and opportunities that even though you're a great applicant and a great candidate, you may not get chosen your first round because of the sheer numbers, nothing to do really with you. And at the end of the day, if that's what you want to do, just like stick with it. And I think people get discouraged because I've had really great, what I consider a great candidate and not get in their first round, but just keep plugging away, keep pushing. And in that year that you have that in between, maybe you'll gain like new experience. It's not wasted time. It's like, you know, it's a valuable time to gain knowledge about yourself, and it's all going to help you in the long run. So I guess don't get make sure it's what you want to do, and if it's what you want to do, like keep going for it. Like don't get discouraged. You don't make it the first time, you will make it the second or the third time. So
Gia, I think that's amazing advice. Where can people find you?
My main kind of way to find me is my Instagram account. I don't have a blog yet, something that maybe mm-hmm. I'll do one day. But for now, I call it like my Insta blog. So that's at yeah. So Healthy, at XO period HEALTHY. It's kind of like a play on my name because my name's Sochi. And so it's like So Healthy, but like also XO Healthy.
I love it.
And then
it's thanks, one thanks. Of the like best name, like IG.
Oh, thank you. So yeah, I figured I was trying to look for a way to not spell out my name because I know that's so tricky for people. And I thought, so I wanted to do something fun. Yeah. And then, yeah. And I work at the Seal Dermatology and Boutique. It's there's two clinics, one in Pasadena, California, and one in West Hollywood, California. And I work at both of them, mostly the Pasadena one. And then I also work for Carbon Health, which is telemedicine, and also has some brick and mortar clinics as well, all over California. And now we're expanding into other states. So that's very where you cool. can find me.
Awesome. All right, Sochi. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And hopefully we can meet in person and maybe do trainings together one day soon.
That would be incredible. That would definitely be full circle. And it was a pleasure speaking with you today. I had so much fun. And I hope I didn't talk your ear off. I felt like I was just going on and on, but I guess that's the point.
No, it was great. Yes, that's absolutely the point of a podcast. Thank you again, Sochi, for taking the time to speak with me. I love getting to pick people's brains, and I'm so happy to finally have been able to highlight PAs. Please make sure to follow along with Sochi on IG at xo.healthy. So healthy. I love that. It's the perfect handle. She really couldn't have done better. But sorry. Back on track. Please be good to each other, folks. It's a really interesting time in the world. Let's just continue to make some space and send out some love to everybody. Don't forget to follow along with me at The WOMED. And please keep sending me your NDE moments and people you'd like to hear from. I love recommendations. Till next week, WOMED out.